Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
We've got a very special guest in the studio today, the General Manager of Uber Australia, Simon Rossi. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Joe. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Simon. Thank you for joining us. How did you get here today?
I actually walked here from my house in South Yarra. It's a lovely walk along the Yarra to the city.
It is a nice walk. Now, it's quite possible that there are some of our listeners who don't know what Uber is. And they've probably heard this word, and I think they think it's like the interwebs. I think they think it's a channel they can turn on and turn off. But you better give us your lift pitch for what Uber is.
Sure. So Uber is a technology company. We have built a smartphone app that connects somebody looking to get from A to B with the nearest driver. We have two products, really, generally across Australia. The first is Uber Black, which is like a professional chauffeur-driven limousine service. And then there's UberX, which is allowing individuals, once they've been through the criminal background checks, to use their own personal vehicle to transport people around. I think, importantly, probably what isn't recognised is that Uber doesn't own any of these vehicles and we don't employ any drivers. We provide the technology that connects a rider with a driver.
So, and how do you become a driver or a passenger?
Quite simply, from a driver's perspective, you sign up online to register your interest. We'll then require you to provide some identification, come into the office to do a criminal background check, to do a driving history check. And once you've completed those, or we've completed those on your behalf, and you've passed our requirements, basically we show you how to use the app, and away you go as a driver. For a rider, it's quite the same. You download the smartphone app and register an account.
Yeah, it's all pretty cool. And yeah, there's no money that changes hands.
There's no money. So we require a credit card when you first register your account to be inputted into the system. And that means that any time you book a trip, it automatically charges that card. So there's no cash required in the vehicles, which creates a safer environment for the driver.
Now, Mark, have you been Ubering?
I have. I'm a proponent of the shared economy. We've done other shared economy shows before, particularly with regards to
places to sleep.
Places sharing. Yeah, yeah. So the big one being Airbnb, but plenty of other ones. And there's some that are targeted specifically to the gay and lesbian community. And it depends. And there are some that are very micro to cities or countries or states. Mm-hmm. So we're very pro this because travel is one of those things. If you've got a lot of money, you can throw money at a problem and you can get anywhere you like anyway. But not everybody can do that. Yeah. And not everybody benefits. So one of the things about the shared economy that we're particularly interested in is having a look at what the benefits are. Aside from the technology service provider, mm-hmm. it's a two-way benefit to individuals. So let's talk us through that, because it's not just the driver that's benefiting by charging.
Yeah.
It's also people who are probably getting a better deal than the usual paradigm that's existing.
100%. And so the share economy is an economic model that's gaining mass popularity around the world. And this goes beyond cars and houses. It goes into tools, even into skills. And it's really about technology connecting people. And it really challenges the traditional seller to buy a model where if you need something, you need to go to a wholesaler or a retailer. And it's allowing one another to just connect with each other to buy, sell and trade. I think what we see there is that because it's individuals allowed to use their biggest asset or their second biggest asset to try and make a little bit of money back on that. So it's great for the person that's renting or providing the service because they can get a return on often what's their biggest asset. And that means it's also probably a better, cheaper cost for the buyer.
And it's incredible because I'm pretty sure, and you will know if this statistic is correct, that most private passenger cars spend 97% of their life stationary.
Yeah, I think, absolutely. I think I've heard a statistic that about they're utilised about 20% of the time, a vehicle, and the rest of the time it actually sits there depreciating as an asset or sits in, as we're talking about just before we came on air, it's $55 to park your car in Melbourne for 4 hours. So it's not only the cost of the vehicle, but it's the associated costs that go with that as well.
Yeah, which is quite substantial. And the sharing economy, or economy D, I think, was what it was first coined as by some economists.
So what does the D stand for?
I can't remember now. But
is that like the first economy was the primary agrarian, B, the C is
and
modern
D
consumer
is,
industrial complex?
D is what we now are calling the sharing economy.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it
I
had,
did not
you,
know
you're
that.
Right, it's made such a big difference because it's cut out the middleman, so to speak. And we see certainly in tourism-related products and services, everything from tour guiding, where you know we know that there are some organisations that actually give back to local communities if you book tours through them. People like
interesting
Vayable.
You bring that up. Tourist guide. When I was in Israel, I had a semi-registered person who took me on an unregistered tour because Israeli tourism is very much so about being pro-state.
Yes.
So I had a Christian Palestinian Arab Israeli who gave me his version of what happens there, being married to a Christian Palestinian, but he had Israeli number plates.
So that was the kind of tour that you couldn't have got out of the guidebook.
No. It wasn't kosher. It was good.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Simon, with regards to Uber, how many rides have happened in Melbourne since Uber started?
Yeah, so we, about a month ago, completed our millionth trip on UberX. And that was in about the first 11 months that we've been here. UberX has been in Melbourne for now,
so just
on 12
touch
months.
On the difference between UberX and Uber Black again.
So Uber Black is the professional sort of limousine-type service.
More expensive?
Yeah, more expensive. Usually the drivers do it as a full-time job. They have private work as well as using Uber to sort
and
of...
And it's the VHA, VHB
exactly.
plates.
In Melbourne, it's that. And then UberX is allowing individuals to use their own personal vehicle. As long as we do the background check on them and we check the vehicle for safety, they can transport people around in their own vehicle.
I've had quite a variety of vehicles that have picked up from UberX. UberX.
Yeah, I mean, we can get
And they're quite often the ones that get used quickest in your area.
Yeah, I mean, we've almost got 5,000 drivers here in Victoria, and the majority of them are UberX partners, and we're starting to see it spread out to the suburbs, where I think in Melbourne at the moment it's a 4-minute ETA to be picked up for an Uber anywhere from, I guess, Brighton around to sort of Eaglemont and out to Coburg. So we've really been able to spread in the past 12 months, and we're starting to see now, we're talking a bit earlier, that people are selling their cars. This is a real alternative transportation option for people that they can rely on. And our hope with this, and there's a new product that we'll be releasing shortly, which is called Uber Pool. And really what Uber Pool is just sophisticated carpooling. You can be in a trip on your way to a destination. Then as you're on the way, I'm also looking to go in that direction. And so we'll share the car. If we do that, that means the driver can make a little bit more money, but you and I as passengers will actually pay less. And as we start to create really, really safe, reliable transport, people will start to rely on it and they'll start to sell their cars and they'll start to use this type of transport or public transport more frequently. If we're able to have people relying on this type of transportation, not buying more cars, selling cars, we actually start to reduce congestion in our cities. And that's really the goal for Uber, is about creating a better city that we live in by reducing cars and reducing congestion.
Did you know Joy Audio Production Services can help you with your audio recording needs, no matter what the task at hand? We have a way to support you and your business. We can produce radio-style interviews for your website, on-hold greetings, podcasts, voiceovers for video, and more. Call Joy's production manager, Jason, on 1-300-569-949 or email production@joy.org.au. That's 1-300-569-949. Joy Audio Production Services, commercial grade audio quality at community radio rates.
Because our guest is Simon.
It is. We have Mr. Simon Rossi from Uber in the studio. So, Simon, before we were talking about just, you know, how well Melbourne has embraced Uber. But to help that cuddle take place, you guys have come up with some amazing marketing techniques. You've delivered everything from gelati to kittens.
In minis.
So you better tell everybody what you do to drum up a bit of PR.
Yeah, I mean, I guess ultimately what we think about every day is creating a great experience. The experience starts in when you jump in an Uber and there's, you know, more often than not, water and mints in the car. Mm-hmm. And so every day we're really focused on that. But then every once in a while we want to really amplify that experience, and we'll offer, I guess, unforgettable experiences that people will love and share. You know, some of the things that we've done recently was supercars around the Grand Prix track. We had helicopters into the races last year. We've done ice cream. We've delivered ice cream. We'll do that again, hopefully, this year.
Oh, so, yes, I've got someone who wants to know when the kittens are coming back.
The kittens are coming. So we did kittens, and we had a really, really great response. I think with the kittens, there's sort of two parts to that. One is that...
Were they also by the hour?
It was for 15 minutes, the kittens.
Right.
We would deliver them to your location. We let you play with a kitten for 15 minutes. And then, importantly, what we would do is we'd provide you the details of where that kitten came from. And actually, the kittens that we use were all homeless, from homeless shelters. And there's actually a lot of homeless animals that are stuck in these shelters. And the idea was to really...
find homes.
Yes, exactly. And in Melbourne, we had a really, really good response. I think 75% of the kittens that were taken out were actually adopted the next day. So it is wild. Whilst there, you know, for us, that's a lot about the experience that we provide for people. There was a good cause behind the kittens. Glad to say that we'll do ice cream again this year. We did it last year, and interestingly, we do it around the world. Uber's now in 316 cities, I think. So in every one of those cities,
okay. So it's city based, not country based or state based.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. So what's the reach of Uber? You were mentioning before it's very strong inner city.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's going out to the suburbs. So what's the kind of reach of Uber? If I was sitting in Geelong,
Yeah, I mean, with Geelong, we've actually launched as its own city. Right. So Uber is operating down there, and I think you can get an Uber all the way down to Anglesey from Geelong, and you can actually get an Uber between Geelong and Melbourne. I think when we look at Melbourne, we're sort of pushing all the way down to Frankston now.
Right.
You know, the closer you are to the middle of the city, the better the service, I guess, the more frequency or the more cars it'll be around. But in 12 months, we have started to spread to most of the suburbs across Melbourne. Mm.
And how does Melbourne stack up to other cities around the world that are of comparable population size that Uber operates in?
Yeah, I think, here in Australia, Melbourne is now our largest market in Australia. So the people of Melbourne really embraced Uber and embraced UberX.
What do you think it is, Simon?
I think it's a couple of things. One is I've got a great team here working really hard to do that.
Oh, we've reached a KPI, pat on the back.
I think people in Melbourne are probably not so much fussy about, like, it has to be a nice, shiny vehicle. They're happy to get in the car and share the experience with the driver. It's not about riding in necessarily a really beautiful limousine. You're okay to ride in your mate's car, and that's sort of how people are seeing it in Melbourne, I think. So, we've just been really pleased, really happy that the response and the support that we've got here in Melbourne.
And as a business in the sharing economy, what other like-minded organisations do you work with that work within the sharing economy?
So we've got, I think, Airbnb we've worked with here in Australia and around the world. I think we as an organisation, spend a lot of time with the startup communities, and there's a lot of sharing economy startups that are out there at the moment. I think one of our biggest partners, Sidekicker, they provide skills as part of the share economy. And so we work with those guys. We always look for other businesses doing similar things and other startups that we can work with locally, so we can, you know, support the startup community, I guess. Mm.
Okay, so that's very granular, going to people who are on the ground trying to innovate, do something new. Uber also helps people who are challenged economically, right? Trying to get them into the space. What are your sort of social justice initiatives with Uber? Because Uber's a very valuable company.
Mm-hmm.
It's become huge.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's also a company that's got a lot of social justice.
Yeah, I mean, I think importantly, what we do, and this is really when we talk about UberX, it's allowing individuals in their spare time to go out and make a bit of money with their car. And some of the stories that I hear and the population of our drivers, like the vast majority, I think it's 70 to 80% of our drivers do this only 18 hours a week, and they make $500, $600. And they're doing that because they're either underemployed or they're just not earning enough and they need to make that little bit of extra money to support their family. We've got a large population of semi-retired and retired individuals that have time and maybe just want to go out, meet people sometimes, mm-hmm. And also make a little bit more money so they can enjoy their retirement. So it really is, you know, the conversation can quite often be Uber versus taxi. It's much bigger than that. It's really about the better utilisation of the vehicles that we have and allowing individuals to make a little bit of money in the time that they see fit.
And fewer vehicles on the road, effectively. So.
Yeah, and that's sort of our goal in the long term. If we can create this safe, reliable transport, people will rely on it more and then you better utilise the cars that we have rather than putting more cars on the road. I think in Melbourne it's like 80% of trips are done with one individual in the car. So if we can start to have an impact on that and have two or three people in each car, we could start to impact the congestion and the traffic that we have in our cities.
Which would be amazing.
Yeah.
Mm. And there's also public transport. So one of the issues around Uber, it's more point to point, isn't it? That's what. And so when are the times that people are using Uber? They're not commuting to work, I'm assuming. Are people doing that?
Yeah, I mean, they are now, actually. What we're starting to see, we get a busy period between 6 and 9 a.m. in the mornings. People are actually relying on Uber to get from to work. We see it then pick up again from 4 to 7 during the week. Mm-hmm. And it's really over the weekends, you know, it's people that are going out and drinking. Typically, they're using Uber as their choice to get home rather than drink driving. Mm. But yeah, I think it's quite interesting, actually. If you look at the 316 cities we operate in, the movement of all those cities is pretty much the same. It's most of these trips are taken on the weekend in every single city that we operate.
Yes, it's Friday night.
Yeah.
It's Friday night, isn't
it?
Something you haven't spoken yet about, Simon, is the rating system. Mm-hmm. Would you like to talk about how the rating system works for riders and drivers?
Yeah, for sure. A very important part of our safety message, I guess, is a rating system. What the rating system is basically asking every single rider and driver to rate each other at the end of a journey. It's a 5-star rating process, so it's 0 stars to 5 stars. Anytime somebody rates less than four, so 3 and below, we actually ask for further structured input. Was it the quality of the car? Was it the service? What was the problem? We actually break that down, and we then use that data on a weekly basis to review and spot trends in the performance of the vehicles on the road. And that can be at a macro level or it could be at a micro level. So if we are seeing that a rider or driver is consistently getting really, really low ratings, we'll then start to take action.
And is that frequent as a percentage?
No, it's not. I mean, we as a percentage, the service is I think in Melbourne our star rating for the drivers is about 4.7 out of 5, and that's, you know, 1 to 1.5 million trips. So consistently the ratings are very high, and similar on the driver side, they're still predominantly very hard. And we focus in on this every week. We spend a lot of time analysing that data and making sure that we're taking action to make sure that the service is the best service that can be delivered.
We need to give a bit special thank you to Dennis of Hoppers Crossing.
Did Dennis join?
He has, yes.
Dennis from Hoppers Crossing.
Thank you
for joining Joy 94.9.
So back to the star rating.
Oh, actually, we've got another email.
And
it doesn't have a name on it, but very thankful for the email. We're not putting you under pressure here, but maybe you would consider a corporate membership. We actually have corporate memberships as well, business memberships at $165 a year. So we're going to shake you down for that before you leave the building.
Happy to support.
One of our members has said Uber and UberX becoming a Joy business member. They'd be listed on the website as a Joy business member too. That's worth celebrating.
And if you've got a business and...
We don't even have to do our job, Mark.
We really should have got someone from News Corp or somebody to get a $10,000 out of them. But that's not why you're here today, by the way.
Support.
It's an opportunity. Yeah. So,
and do the drivers see their rating and do the riders see their rating?
No. So we
so that's a management tool.
Correct.
Yeah, and a popularity contest.
Yeah, so the drivers do. The drivers will see their star rating and we continually give them the feedback
on a regular basis. So when I give a rating, can they see that it's me as a user who has provided that rating or it's anonymised?
Correct. It's anonymised and we aggregate. They see the aggregate data. So once a driver's done hundreds and hundreds of trips, you don't see it moving that much because the general is people are giving 5 stars because it is a good service.
Yes.
But we for the drivers, we provide a summary of their weekly trips and provide the feedback to them so they can get an understanding of why their rating is what it is. From a rider's perspective, we actually don't share that data. If someone wrote in and asked, we would share it, but it's not available in the app.
Okay. I just always assume it must be pretty good because everyone turns up.
Yeah.
So Maureen Dowd, I think, was the author of an article just recently that was talking about how she must be a terrible customer. Do you know Maureen Dowd,
the op-ed New York Times?
New York Times. That she said that she was struggling to get Uber cars. And her Uber driver said to her, you mustn't be a very good passenger because you get rated by us as well. And she didn't know that.
Yeah.
So she said, is that why people aren't taking my job? So I don't know why she was rated. She didn't put this in her article. But I think that's one of the interesting social things about Uber.
Goodness, is that another pressure of modern life? I haven't got enough Facebook likes and I don't have an Uber rating.
It is actually, when you book a trip, we do share the star rating between the rider and driver. So that's the time that it is shared. So if I'm jumping in an Uber after this, once the driver accepts my trip, he'll see my star rating and I'll see his as well. Yeah. So that's at the point of trip that does happen.
Yeah. So I think that's very interesting because we have this unusually high reliance on the customer is always right to the point that service providers are abused. Yeah. And I think that's something that's endemic in taxis where people say, I can do what I want. I can throw up in the car. I've paid $15 to go around the corner. It's your problem. And I think that's one of the interesting things about Uber. No, your behavior is very much going to be evaluated by the person that's had you in your private vehicle or their private vehicle. And they've got the right to turn around and say, no, you were drunk and useless. And I wouldn't advise anyone else picking you up and taking your money.
Yeah, and it's very much a community. We like to think about it. And so to have a successful community, as you know, you've got to be looking at both or all contributors to that community. Mm. And I think, when it's sort of self-regulating, I guess, the community or the system, it's if you're a good service provider or a good traveler, people will rate you highly, and that's great. And if you're not, then we were able to start to manage that service.
I think that's true, because I definitely noticed that at certain times I can have the same Uber driver come and pick me up, and I think, well, you know, obviously, you know, it's nice seeing a friendly face, mm-hmm. and you start a bit of a conversation and you get to know what's going on in their life. And, you know, it's a lovely sense of community in a world where you don't have as much of that face-to-face contact.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We start to see a lot of the drivers that live out in the suburbs, when they first turn on the app to say start working on a Saturday morning, they're turning it on in that suburb, and they're often picking up similar people that are riders in that suburb. And so they start to actually see similar faces, particularly when you're a little bit further out of town.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, communities working together.
Yeah.
So let's go to you. How long have you been the GM here for?
It's about 18, 19 months now here in Melbourne.
Okay. And prior to that, were you working in the sharing economy or in the technology space?
I was in the technology space. So I spent a bit of time working out in San Francisco in Silicon Valley for another startup called Yammer, which...
We've... I'm not going to ask you about that, but let's talk about San Francisco, a place where, Silicon Valley, where a lot of these ideas, people go from all around the world to pull these ideas because that's where the funding is, that's where the corporation is, that's where the likelihood for success is the highest in the world, right?
Yep.
So what other kind of sharing technologies were percolating up that have formulated, particularly in areas where we're looking at trying to get people who have got limited resources to be able to have maximized life experience?
Yeah, I think the really interesting thing about San Francisco that I noticed when I first went there is that everybody that works in startups is so passionate about what they're doing. You go to the pub and all they talk about is work. And people are really, really passionate and they really enjoy and they really love what they do. They're changing the world. They're going to make a difference. They're going to have an impact. And that's...
But people are from everywhere, aren't they?
People are from everywhere. You know, majority, I'd say, would be, you know, Americans. But it just is a sense. I've never seen anything like that in the world in terms of how... passionate people are about the work that they do. So I think anybody that wants to get into startups or the share economy or anything like that, it's worth going to San Francisco to try and work, because the as you said, the money's there, the ideas are there. A lot of the talent go there specifically because of the environment that it supports.
So what's the ratio of startups to successful startups? Is it 100 to 1? Is it really a lottery win?
I don't know the exact number, but yeah, there's a lot. You know, for every one that succeeds, there's probably 10 that fail.
Yeah.
You know, you see that there's...
But that doesn't mean the whole idea failed. It means...
No. I mean, and I think most entrepreneurs have had... a startup that has failed along the way. It's sort of almost a really good learning tool for people to go out with an idea. They learn a lot about why it wasn't successful, and then that learning can often go and help them in the next startup they do that may be a success.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, it, I mean, it is. It's a risky kind of business, isn't it? I mean, after the dot-com crash, you know, I think the cash burn rates aren't quite as exorbitant as they used to be, but it's no doubt that's where the venture capitalists are.
Yeah, and I think...
Even big companies like BlackBerry, who were so much on their game, can lose out significantly. What were they, 60% of US market share, and now they're two over a matter of 5 years? Mm. And they were really on top of their game.
Yep.
So
she gets real, real quick.
Yeah, no, absolutely. things change very, very quickly. And I think that whilst you may be considered a successful company today, if you don't continue to innovate and continue to deliver great services or new areas of the share economy, for example, someone will overtake you and you won't be that successful business. So I think that's something that we certainly talk about a lot at Uber, that whilst we've grown very quickly and we've done a lot of great things, we need to continue to up the game every day, because somebody else will do that if we don't.
Yeah, it's very much, isn't it? The gorilla's been poked in the eye, and it's like, well, okay, we've done it now. We can't look back.
Now what?
Yeah.
We have to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
So does a lot of innovation come out of the Melbourne team?
I mean, on a number of levels, yes. Every day we need to innovate our processes. We need to innovate the way we look at things, because you go from a business that in Melbourne, there was only one of us. I was in the office alone in 18 months ago. We've now got sort of 20 or staff. And every day we need to look at the challenges that we have in front of us in terms of innovating to see how do we make it easier for a driver to sign up? How do we make it easier for riders to hear about us? So there's innovation that happens at that level in the organisation. In terms of products, probably not so much. Everyone in the organisation globally has the ability to contribute suggestions and ideas, and that sort of goes up into a filter where they choose the best ideas that we focus on. So in some respects, I think every city innovates every day at a micro level on process and things that they do locally. And in big picture, the organisation is structured around openness and allowing everybody to contribute to new ideas.
Now, we've had an email come in from Brad. So thank you, Brad. Good to know you're listening. His first question is, what are the safeguards for the consumer with Uber?
So I guess on there's a number of levels of safety. So for every single driver that comes on the platform must go through a criminal background check that we run with the Australian Federal Police.
Okay, so that's police check. Does that include working with children?
It doesn't include working with children. It doesn't. But we do a police check, and everyone must have a clear no criminal record. We also do a driving history check, so they can never have lost their license to be put on the platform. So from a background perspective, that's all done before a driver can get out there. In terms of safety whilst on the road, we use technology. So once you book a trip, we share the driver's phone number, his photo, his star rating, his car registration plate. So there's that accountability there with the technology, that there is no anonymous people getting into a car ever. And so when there's no anonymity, there's less chance of things happening, because we've got the details of every single rider and driver. And if the unfortunate incident does happen or an accident does happen, we've got the people then we can follow up. And I think that's a really important part, that whilst, we're doing a million trips a day around the world, I think it is, or a million trips a week around the world, there's going to be incidences, there's going to be accidents. Unfortunately, I think what's important is what we do once those things do happen, and the way we follow those processes up.
And is there's a new accessibility component to Uber as well?
Yeah, in Australia we just launched a new product called Uber Assist. And what that is our experienced top-rated drivers that have larger sedans that have put through third-party training. And I can't recall the provider at the moment, but it's about helping people that are less mobile to move around. And so the product's Uber Assist. So the idea is, if you're elderly or you're in a wheelchair or you're coming home from hospital, that this Uber Assist product will spend more time making sure that they are helping you move from A to B.
Okay. And it's not really a target of Uber to have under 18s riding with you, is it, in terms of a working with children check?
I mean, it's everybody to register an account must be 18 years old, so it's supposed to be for adults.
But I guess, if parents put their kids in an Uber.
Well, the account is supposed to go with you, right? Because that's on the phone, so.
Yeah, I don't suppose it's much of an issue, really.
Yeah.
So a child should be with an adult.
Yeah.
So interesting that you've gone to Uber Assist, because there are a lot of people who are quite vulnerable in society. The getting around is a very challenging part of it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, maxi taxi is great in theory, terrible in execution. Getting people. So what about people with mobility aids, such as wheelchairs? Is that something that is
Working on that at the moment.
Yeah, that's a future thing.
Yeah, I think Assist was our first stepping stone into helping, provide a wider service. We're currently looking at wheelchair accessible vehicles at the moment to see if we can get those in the app. And so we'll continue to look at products and services that will help various groups, be it in wheelchairs. I think one of the new products we're testing in Brisbane this week is actually to assist hearing impaired drivers.
Wow.
So we've got a lot of hearing impaired drivers on the platform, and the platform works well for them now, but there's a few things we can tweak. So we're testing a new platform where the technology just works a little bit different, and it alerts the rider that the driver is hearing impaired, and so that the rider will then put their destination into the app, and they know what to expect when the driver turns up. So there's a lot of things that we are doing in those realms to continue to offer our service to more and more people and create opportunities for more people.
Because accessibility is a big issue, and especially transport, localised transport, getting to appointments or getting to work for people with disabilities or people living with challenging conditions.
Yes.
This could be a real...
Yeah, I think Uber Assist actually came off the back of... we noticed we had a lot of carers that were using UberX, carers that are caring for a family member, and it's a full-time job, and so they, you know, hard to keep down... So the caring is a full-time job, so it's hard to keep down another full-time job, and they were using UberX in their part-time just to, one, to get out of the house, to sort of break free from the...
Almost as a bit of respite.
So we actually started to see there's a lot of them. So we've done a partnership with Vic Carers here where we're encouraging more carers to use UberX as a way to get out and make a little bit of money, but also to work on the Uber Assist platform.
Yes, because they've got a skill set that's quite special.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's something we've just started on that journey probably 2 months ago, and we're going to continue to roll out more services in those spaces.
And I guess that'll evolve over time.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about insurance? We've had another listener email in, James, thank you very much, about insurance. What happens with that? Because the private vehicle is registered as a private vehicle and is not supposed to be used for business purposes. So what happens in that space?
Yeah, so it does change state by state a little bit, but here in Victoria we have every vehicle has its own insurance. And must have its insurance. And on top of that, Uber has an insurance policy that sits on top of the car's insurance. So so the process is you claim on the car insurance. If for some reason that insurance doesn't pay out, then our insurance policy will kick in and sit on top of that. So
that's a part of what you pay for as a in your fees back to Uber from the driver.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct. So every there's multiple levels of insurance here. It does vary state to state, but that here in Australia there's two levels. So every single trip is backed by about a $6 million insurance policy. That's per trip.
Right, so that's public liability as well as
And most Uber trips are pretty short, so I think that would cover it.
What about people who are? I know we were talking before about getting bad ratings, but what do you do in those unfortunate circumstances where you've got people who are drunk, and then they start to get, how do we say, amorous?
I mean,
with the driver or with each other?
Well, I'll leave that up to you. You can answer however you choose.
I think, I mean, we as we said, we're doing millions of trips around the world every week.
So you're going to see some freaky deep.
I mean, I think what's great is that typically most of the trips are a 5-star rating. If anything does happen, we just encourage both rider and driver to make contact with us so we can then help and assist in whatever it may be. And that can be from, you know, providing a better service through to whatever may have happened in a trip. But we have some pretty stringent processes for following up anything that people report in, and we'll work with, you know, the individuals to make sure that any incident is rectified.
And when people get sick in your car...
I mean, if that happened, we would say to our partner drivers, go clean it up, and we'll ask the rider to pay.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
I mean that's fair.
Absolutely. Mm.
Speaking of fair, stick with us. You're enjoying 94.9 in the Escape Pod.
Joy 94.9 has a huge range of programs available for podcast. In fact, Joy is one of the largest podcasting communities on community radio. If you haven't checked out our podcasting service, you're missing out. Visit joy.org.au, click on the podcast tab, and you'll find a list of Joy programs regularly sharing the best interviews, news, and reviews. There's tens of thousands of hours for you to enjoy, so check it out now. joy.org.au.
In the studio today in the Escape Pod, we've got Mr. Simon Rossi from Uber. And Simon, we haven't asked you where you like to travel.
Having lived in London and San Francisco for 10 years, I spent a lot of time travelling across Europe. I think probably two or three favourites. My family's Italian, so I'd love to go back to the northern part of Italy, up in Tuscany. Planning a trip to Turkey in July, August this year. That's always a great place to go. And I think I love getting back to London. Having lived there for so long,
it's a great town.
It's an amazing town, and it changes so much when you go away for a year. So I'm looking forward to being back there in
July. I know they
built
the Shard.
They built the Shard. And even
the Shard.
Even particularly East London has changed so much in the last 10 years.
Shoreditch around there.
Shoreditch area. Wow. It's incredible.
It's just booming in Shoreditch. You know, it's become, it's hipster central.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll be fine. What you can't see, everybody, is that Simon has a beard, so he'll be fine.
There's also a really big startup community out in Shoreditch as well.
Because there's Vietnamese restaurants and cocktail bars, so exactly. There's going to be entrepreneurs.
Yes, yes. And the government's been great supporting the startup community out there with a lot of grants and things like that.
Because it can't be all about the bankers.
No.
They're not all Fiona's.
No.
So Turkey. And was it hard to come back to Melbourne after being away for so long?
It was. I think I sort of talk about this quite regularly with friends. I think people in London, no one drives to work. Everyone's commuting in and out. And it sort of lends itself to always go and have a drink after work. And it just seemed much more
social.
And
there's a rampant alcoholism, which...
Yeah. It's probably harder living over there, but...
People drink during the day.
Yeah, I mean, people go to the pub and they'll...
It's okay if you're a grown-up and an adult. You're allowed to have a glass of wine during the day.
I was living in Dubai and British expats were necking 2 pints at lunch and going back to work.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's not
from
one
a Muslim
glass
company.
Of wine.
And it's like, guys, and they go, I'm only having 2. Yeah. They're pints.
Yeah, that's very English. Very English.
Necking them.
Oh, dear.
Make the jaw move.
So you're missing the social life.
So that was
the booze.
Yeah, I mean that was a little bit hard to come back. I guess it things move a bit quicker. I think the other one, and particularly, it's so much harder to travel from Australia.
Yes.
So if you want to get out and see
it's
another country, you apart from New Zealand, we're 9 hours away, I think, or Bali's probably 7.5 hour flight. Mm. In London, you're 3 hours from 50 countries across Europe, which that for me has been the hardest piece, is not being able to jump on a plane. And you know, travelling across Europe, you get different languages, different cultures, different cuisines, all within about an hour or two of a flight. Where
Dude, here, go to Dandenong.
Yeah, or even going to Perth. I travel to Perth every couple of weeks and it's the same.
Yeah.
You know, the restaurants are the same, the food's the same.
They're a bit pricier.
A little bit pricier.
$60 for a latte in Perth.
Yeah.
So what are the things you like about coming back to Melbourne?
Well, it's always great to be here with family. It's very livable city, I think, in Melbourne. Like, everyone's got a lot of space. You know, in London, I don't think I ever had an outdoor area in any of the houses I lived in. And so here, everyone's got a bit of space. The city moves a little bit slower at times, which is quite nice. So it sort of feels a little bit more relaxing, a little bit easier to live. I guess it's also, you know, some of the country, you get out of the city and some of our country areas, particularly the wineries here in Australia, are quite amazing. So it's always nice to sort of come back here. And I know my parents are from Eltham, and there's wineries almost in Eltham these days. So, you know, 40 minutes from the city, 30 minutes from the city, you can be out at a winery.
Yeah, you can close your eyes within 3 hours and be in a vineyard and think you're in Tuscany.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Yarra Glen, Tuscany.
Yeah.
See it.
Similar.
Provence, you know, it's all happening.
So where next for the sharing economy? I mean, I think Uber and Airbnb are probably two of the real outliers in the whole sector. Where do you think it's going to go next? Because people are becoming more wearable with their technology. What's going to go? What is your sense of things? Where do we all throw our share money?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're only just at the beginning of the share economy. You know, Uber's been around 5 years, Airbnb probably 6 or 7. I think we're going to see the impact of the share economy start to hit other industries more so than seeing the share economy change. I think if we look at, you know, what the share economy is doing, it's having an impact on retail at times because individuals can just buy and sell with each other.
In that case, eBay was very big part of that.
Yeah, but even when you start to think about the financials, you know, you look at Uber, who provides transportation, owns no vehicles. Airbnb, the largest accommodation provider, owns no houses hotels. So the hotels, previously, when building a hotel, they go borrow money from the banks. Now they're not building as many hotels, so there's less money being lent from the banks. And so we're starting to see a knock-on effect, which is going to start to impact a lot of industries. I think we see it here that with, you know, tax regimes and regulations need to be updated to embrace this type of innovation. And I think that's where we'll see most of
legal
the impact.
System.
Yeah, I think we'll see most of the impact in those spaces where governments start to understand the benefits that these types of technology provides and the share economy provides, and then starting to structure regulations around encouraging that type of innovation.
Yeah, so definitely, if you've had a little bit of your cash freed up, due to the sharing economy, you know what to do. Go to www.joy.org.au and donate some money to Joy, because we love to share ourselves with you, but it costs money.
So we've had another one call in, Joy?
We have Mark from St Kilda.
Good name.
Yes, Brian from Blairgowrie.
Yeah.
It's just all happening. People are hearing the call.
And thank you very
call.
Much to Uber, who we just embarrassed on
that was
on air to become
very cheeky.
A business member.
That's right. Very
which you can
cheeky
become
indeed.
A business member.
And we've got a couple of messages from some of our other business members.
At Joy 94.9, there are approximately 300 volunteers bringing you over 75 shows, 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. That's a lot of facts and figures to take in, but here's one more number for you to think about. 1-300-569-949. That's the number to call to talk to the Joy sales team about becoming a Joy sponsor. One phone call can get your business on air and online, reaching thousands of Joy listeners at a price you can afford. 1-300-JOY-949. That's 1-300-569-949.
And you're in the Escape Pod on Joy 94.9.
Certainly are.
Yeah, Mr. Simon Rossi, our special guest from Uber.
Just go over quickly. Richard, thank you, Richard, who I'm assuming is contacting us because he's also joining today on Radiothon.
Yep.
Has a quick question. Go through the difference between Uber X and Uber Black again, just quickly. What?
So Uber Black is a professional chauffeur driven service.
Yeah.
So the guys that work Uber Black, they have a limousine type vehicle, VHA, VHB registered car here in Victoria. And they're full timers. They have their own private bookings and they use Uber, you know, to fill in the gaps. Uber X is once an individual's been through all the criminal background checks, it allows individuals to use their own personal car to transport people around.
Right. So there's a price difference between the two. One's a premium, higher level execution. One's sometimes a Suzuki Swift, sometimes a
correct.
BMW.
Yeah, I mean,
which is exactly the variance I've had in my
absolutely. And
Uber X's.
And the prices, you know, Uber Black is more expensive. And I think the minimum fare is like $20, and the per kilometre price is much higher. Uber X is probably in Melbourne almost half the price of a cab these days.
Yeah,
it's very competitive.
Yeah.
And what's your favourite travel tip, Simon? Every Escape Pod guest has to tell us.
My favourite travel
that you're
going
to share.
I think
live in London.
Yeah, I mean, I think travelling is or stay a little longer is probably the tip. I think, be it you're going to Sydney for a business meeting, you go for 3 or 4 days and you can really settle in and start to see the city. If you go in for that one day, it becomes a bit too transactional and you don't enjoy the city. You spend most of the time travelling to there and then
commuting.
Getting out.
Yeah.
So I think that works on both a holiday level and a business level, but anytime you can spend a bit more time away, I think is a good thing.
I like what's
tip.
Yours after coming back from NZ? Did you have you changed your mind?
No, I had a great, an absolutely
no,
great
no, no
trip.
About travel tips.
About travel tips. Well, I'm a big believer in not trying to go to too many locations in the one trip.
So it's similar what you're saying.
Yes, because I like to only have to unpack and pack my suitcase once.
Without going on a cruise.
I'm quite cruise material yet. But I think, so I like to just stay in a place and get the feel for a week. Mm. You know, just see the whole week unfold in a city. Mm. There's something really special about that.
Yeah, you can start to spend a couple of days. You can start to feel like you're living in that city, and it's very different to just sort of popping in and out.
Dead right. Mm. Which is also a big part of the sharing economy, the whole Airbnb model. Mm. I've rented apartments before, similarly in Amsterdam and New York and some other places, where it's much different, where you have to go down to the shop, buy your own groceries, do everything yourself, put in a load of laundry. For some reason, those really domestic things are somewhat excitingly different, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it's always fun to see what's in the supermarket.
It's also fun when you don't really read what's on the laundry packet and if that's the laundry or is that the... what's this we're using? Is this bleach? I don't know. We're going to go for it. Smell it. See what happens.
You're very adventurous when it comes to washing, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I did have to say to Jordan, you can turn it around and it's English on the other side. And
whoops.
If it smells like bleach, probably is.
Yeah, that's a very special smell from ammonia. Well, anyway, we don't really want to leave our guests with that.
No, we've got a huge lineup all afternoon. Stick with us. Critical Hitter about to come in and talk to us about online gaming and being gay gamers and all that gaming kind of stuff. After that, we've got
Fender Bender,
the boys in, talking about cars.
Then
we've got
Gaze.
Techno Gaze. And listening to Techno Gaze, because I don't know if I'm letting the cat out of the bag, but Mark has a new toy.
He does. He's got a new wrist accessory.
But we're not going to say what it is because we might burst his bubble, but Mark will be in talking about that. And then we've got a huge evening listening, and don't forget to join. Join 94.9. Right. Thanks for joining us on Escape Pod.
Thanks, Simon.
Thank
Everybody, have a good weekend. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.